If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 397. This is our 2026 CJ Cup Byron Nelson and Sudell Open Tips Podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamber, to discuss this week's PGA and DP World Tour Golf action. Good morning, gents.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit gambleaware.org for more information. And, of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous Golf Betting System website, where we have in-depth betting previews for both the Byron Nelson and the Sudell Open. Paul has been in the stats lab pulling together this week's data. We have Craig Ranch and Rinkven International Golf Club strokes gained rankings, detailed course form, player form and combi sheets, plus new and old predictor models for the PGA and DP World Tour action this week. All of our content is available completely free of charge. There is no paywall or registration required. We're available on X. You can follow us. Barry's at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. We are on Blue Sky. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where this podcast is available each and every week. As ever, if you like what you hear, press that subscribe button. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. We've got, this is from Justin. And Justin is in New Jersey. 5 stars, the number one golf podcast. Greetings, gentlemen. Great start there. Greetings, gentlemen. Justin from New Jersey in the States. My Wednesday mornings start the same way, listening to you gentlemen give excellent information that gets me ready to make my plays for the week. I also find myself humming the opening song throughout the day after listening. You might not give all winners, but I always find the people you back are in the mix on Sunday. You are due for a lot of winners this year. Finally, my favourite part of the pod is Barry scrambling to get his picks together when he is up. Keep up the good works, boys. Or good work, boys. And that is from Justin in New Jersey. Thank you.
Brilliant stuff. Thank you, Justin.
Cheers, Justin. Justin, I do all my best work under maximum pressure. Never was a long-term studier.
Yeah. Last-minute job.
For the listeners, I have one more five-star review left in the in the wings. So, if you could spare time, we haven't had one from Ireland for a while. We haven't had one from Australia for a while. We haven't actually had one from the UK for quite a few weeks either. So, if you are listening to this podcast, spare 10 seconds, 15 seconds, write us a quick review on Apple Podcasts. Give us 5 stars. I'm very likely to be reading it out the week after next. Right, let's talk PGA Championship quickly. I've got some statistics here and some facts that I think just bring a little bit of context to what Aaron Rye actually achieved. Fair play to him. Second PGA Tour victory, first major championship. He was 175-1 with Victor, or Bet Victor, on Monday morning. I doubt if that shortened. Rye's win was the first for an Englishman at the PGA Championship since 1919. I've never heard of this gentleman, but fair play, he won it in 1919. Jim Barnes. He was the 8th player from England to win a major championship since 1940. Let's go through them. Henry Cotton, Max Faulkner, Tony Jacklin, Nick Faldo. It's not a bad list, this. Justin Rose, Danny Willett, Matt Fitzpatrick, and now Aaron Rye. Rye's win marks the first time that that European players have won the first two majors of a season since the beginning of the current four major era. That dates all the way back to 1934. That's crazy. I noticed, I mean, we'll have seen this, I expect, from some of the numbers, but that tournament really did follow the pattern of huge strokes gained putting performances that we saw from Aaron and Mink in 2018 at the BMW Championship. If you remember, Paul went through this in detail in the research podcast. But Rye's winning total was made up of 52% strokes gained tee to green and 48% with the putter. He hit the ball only 310 yards, which was 66th in those that made the cut. If you actually split out his performance, he was 39th for off the tee, second for approach, 40th for around the green, 8th for tee to green, 5th for putting. He gained 6.95 strokes with the putter. Now, if you were just looking at this before and you were looking at the PGA Tour stats heading in, Rye ranked 117th for strokes gained putting. He was 48th for approach and 56th for tee to green across the season. He was 160th for driving distance. Rye continues the narrative of players in good form arriving, taking home the Wanamaker. He was 5th at Myrtle Beach, where he was 13th for approach, 4th for tee to green and 19th for putting. So the putter did warm at the Dunes Golf Club where he was 5th at Myrtle Beach. I think, did he go in as 54-hole leader into that? He was certainly in one of the final groups, I know that.
He was right in the mix, yeah.
That is now 5 years in a row where the winner was in the top five at the previous tournament. 5 years in a row where the winner of the PGA finished in the top five at the previous tournament. And just to go into the strokes gain numbers, Alex Smalley, the amount of crack I was getting about Alex Smalley across all of that PGA Championship was quite fascinating, I thought. He gained 7.342 strokes with the putter across the whole of the 72 holes. That was 64% of his total. JT, 6.981, which was 67% of his total with the putter. But that pales into insignificance. Matty Schmid. I think I sent you boys a note. I don't think I've ever sat and watched a major expecting Matty Schmid to be leading a major with 12 holes to go. He was first for strokes gained putting for the whole week. He gained a mere 7.78 strokes with the putter. That was 74% of his total strokes gained for the week. Just out of interest, Smalley was 150-1. Matty Schmid, 500-1. And Cam Smith, who actually turned up at a golf tournament and actually turned up in a major, which might suggest he's starting to practice again with the PGA Tour maybe dawning around the corner for next year, 225-1, Cam Smith. So yeah, that's me. That's a lot of stats there, but basically what I'm saying is that he was kind of not obvious statistically, but he did follow the pattern of playing nicely, actually arriving at Aaron and Mink. And we did say that in a sea of bombers and on a golf course that wasn't your typical PGA Championship setup, someone could metronomically take that course apart by fairways and greens and strategy, but they had to have a hot putter. And that's the thing with Rye. Same with someone like a JJ Spawn. You had to have the luck of actually being able to get one of these guys where the putter worked. And clearly, Rye, it did work for him. I thought it was a superb performance, and those final 7-8 holes was just amazing stuff from Aaron Rye. And what a boost, guys, for Team Europe for next year's Ryder Cup as well. Yet another quality player that can be put into that selection squad for Luke Donald. What were your thoughts? We'll start with Paul.
Yeah, well, from a betting perspective, disappointing. I expect glove manufacturers around the world will be rejoicing with Aaron Rye winning. Their sales will be going through the roof with that second glove. But, yeah, look, I think if you... And we'll do this after the event. We all go back and post-analyse and post-mortem the event effectively to see how we could have got to Aaron Rye. And there were enough pointers. Your point on him coming in...
first round leader.
Yeah, well, for me, he's a fast starter and quite often a poor finisher. And to your point about him being in the mix at Myrtle Beach, yeah, he was. He finished fifth. But he let slip a really strong opportunity there. And over those final 18, kind of just spilling into the back end of his Saturday round and 20-odd holes, he wasn't very good. And that kind of followed what he'd been doing for the season to date. It wasn't great. His core strengths really weren't there. And the point about him having these spike putting weeks, and look, his putting has improved dramatically at times over the last few years. And there are these weeks where he can find the putter. And when he combines that with the kind of tee to green game that we know he has got, then he can be really dangerous. And that's been evidenced from the wins that he's got both sides of the Atlantic over the years. I guess if you looked at the Keegan Bradley kind of blueprint of a tee to green merchant who had a spiky week, he could have gone down the Aaron Rye route at that point. If you'd gone down the Donald Ross route, then you'd have probably got a little bit more, a little bit more of an indication. Because I'm sure you were on him. You both might have been on him at the Wyndham when he won a couple
Sedgefield.
Of years back. Yes. Yeah.
So his only PGA Tour victory had been on a Donald Ross course, yeah.
Indeed, and I think he's got another couple of top fives on different Donald Ross courses as well, over the years as well. But look, you can't take away from him. I think the way that he played those final 10 holes, when he's standing on that ninth green, it's anyone's tournament. And we were all on Rory, and I think Rory at that point, standing on the ninth green, would have been a shot ahead of him. Yeah, he goes out and makes eagle there. And then the back nine was just incredible. I'm punctuated by the putt on 17, which is going to be what's replayed all the time. But I don't think we should underestimate the way that he played from tee to green for the rest of that back nine. And, with the pressures on that final hole to just leave himself, 10, 12 feet just to cozy it up. Really, really impressive and a popular winner with the players and maybe not so much popular with the punters, but you live and learn.
Popular with the bookmakers.
Popular with the bookies, yeah.
I'd say even if he doesn't make that putt on 17, he just looked so unflappable on the back nine, just calm as well. It was... He hit his flow state. It was really cool to watch, just metronomic, like a video game. And but we knew it wasn't, so it makes it even more impressive how well he played those final 10 holes to go get it done. And took, I guess, what learns the lessons from failures. You know, the way you learn more from failure than victory. So took the lesson, managed to bundle them all together and figure out how to get himself in the right situation mentally to go and finish off the tournament and finish off a major. So, God, it was a great win. Disappointing for us to not catch him, but, I mean, also extremely understandable that we didn't. Look, Paul, you touched on it with the first-round leader. So that's close. It's just, and then you sit there lamenting, God, why didn't I just throw a little bit on him for the overall thing? And it's easy to make up reasons why not.
Yeah, look, but I think the validation for first round leader was more justifiable than backing him outright. Because he does produce more fast starts than he does seriously contending finishes. But if you get yourself into that position and then the kind of serenity to be able to go out and produce those final 10 holes under that pressure, and no one was getting close to him, literally no one.
I know this doesn't directly affect you're punting or, you know, or betting, but I just find some of this information interesting to get out there. This is what Rye's win has done for him. Rye's breakthrough in the major locks up an exemption in the PGA Championship for life. He also can book trips to the next five editions of all the other three majors. He also now is exempt into the last two signature events this season by the victory. Plus, his PGA Tour membership exemption has now extended through to 2031.
Wow.
And for a kind of for a journeyman that's made good, you know, Aaron Rye's been around forever, Paul, and we have seen him, and we say this so many times, for every kind of Chris Gotterup who can win events quickly over a short space of time, you get players like I always remember Jimmy Walker. It took him forever, Jimmy Walker, to win his first tournament, and then he took out a major at the PGA. For Aaron Rye to kind of follow that same route of slowly but surely winning DP World Tour events, another DP World Tour event a few years after that, then struggling to get on the PGA Tour and then making it onto the PGA Tour, then taking a while to win his first one and now winning a major over quite a long strength, you know, period of time, and just working and working and working and working. The amount of pros saying that Aaron Rye is the hardest working pro out there. Him and Alex Norén, they must have a contest on how long they can practice for. And Vijay Singh, yeah, when he's around.
Yeah, he's the last one off the range, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think you need to bear him. The guy's only 31. And
true.
There's plenty, with that worth ethic, with that, you know, the fitness regime that he, and the kind of the mental fitness regime that he appears to employ with his life in general, then... Yeah, who's to say that when the conditions suit, when the course suits, that there's not other big tournaments that he could go ahead and win? You go back to our original analysis of this, and you get to a point where you're looking at a guy who's averaging 287 off the tee and best one in the world. You're starting to have doubts about it, even on what was a shorter than typical PGA setup. But the way the course played, the way the penalty for, you know, slightly, even just slightly off shots was pretty severe, and it just enabled a player like Rye to come through. You know, as you say, you were on Spawn, I was on Brian Harman, and they're the kind of players in that category that I think that you could have made a case for.
Yeah.
And you know, the way that it panned out, it wasn't a massive surprise ultimately that one of them did come through, but yeah, to actually win the thing.
Just to square the circle, Alex Smalley and Matty Schmidt, through their finishes, now get into the Masters next year as well.
Very good. Good for them.
And also, I mean, I'm getting all this from Rob Bolton. So follow Rob Bolton on X. Always well worth a follow. He is the oracle of golf, is Rob Bolton, in terms of exemptions and cutoffs and fields. The PGA marked the cutoff, the first cutoff, top 60 in the world into the US Open. So Patrick Reed, Rio Hitsatsune, David Puig, they get added to the US Open field after Aronimink as well. So plenty going on in the world of golf, and it won't be long before we hit the US Open. So we'll have to plan a US Open research podcast. Anything you want to add, Barry, about the PGA Championship, or shall we move on to this week's golf?
One thing I think I really enjoyed the fact that accuracy actually ended up mattering at the end, you know, to win the tournament. Mm-hmm. So just looking at the difference between Rory and Rye. So Aaron Rye was fourth in driving accuracy. He hits just under 68% of fairways.
Yeah.
Rory was tied 75th in accuracy, which I guess... I don't know if the PGA site excludes players that missed the cut.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Okay, so he's almost DFL for driving accuracy then. 41.07%. And then going to their strokes gained off the tee, So Aaron Rye got plus 0.081 for being fourth most accurate off the tee, and Rory was plus 3.56 for the tournament. So it's just interesting when you then go to their strokes gained approach, because Rory was plus 0.78 and Rye was plus 6.93. So to me, that just screams, actually, the course setup was done and good in a way that accuracy really paid dividends. And I think that's really cool to see in a sport that has seemingly become bomb and gauge. Just whack it as far down as possible, and I'm not saying get away with it, but just be able to still compete fine from pure distance. And it's kind of nice to see that a course setup can... It kind of felt like a little bit like you can at Sawgrass, that the accuracy matters a lot in that way. Not, you know, not they can't be completely easily comparable, contrastable, but just there was value in accuracy, and I think that's a nice thing to see on the tour.
Yeah.
So, yeah, super impressive win by Rye. Let's see how he goes from here.
Yeah, I don't. It can't be a bad thing, can it, for our Team Europe squad?
No, not at all. No. One gripe that I was seeing about the rewarding of accuracy is that if you just missed the fairway, which was quite easy to do, you ended up in a brute of a lie. Like generally, the rough was super lush because that's where it gets watered quite heavily. But if you missed by a good distance where the crowd was, you get this lovely trample down lie. And that's something professional tournaments are just going to always have. It'll always be a factor. But it was a little bit, I guess it's annoying if you've just missed a fairway and you then have no ability to get to go attacking anything.
Yeah, I'm getting confused now with these bloody Fitzpatrick brothers. Matt Fitzpatrick said before the event that one of the things he noted about that being different to when he won at Brookline, the setup at Aronimink, was very much that. He said that a lot of these pros prefer the graduated rough, where actually the first cut is slightly down and you're actually getting more punished for wider
the misses. Further off you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And logically, that makes complete and utter sense. Like to go to, it's such a binary result. If you've just missed a fairway, it's game over. So, yeah, I tend to agree with the graduated rough being a bit more fair. Anyway, interesting tournament. I loved watching the Challenge of the Greens. I thought the greens were fantastic. I thought it was fascinating where they put the pins. it made it super interesting for putting. It ends up being, what, 40% of strokes gained was made up at the... strokes gained putting made up the scores for the field this week, by the looks of it.
Yeah,
taking that from Data Golf correctly, that's a little less than Aronimink usually. So I think it worked out quite well. Maybe it became a little bit too putting heavy, but I found it quite interesting to watch.
It was certainly different, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean these are the best players in the world. I think having pins in some pretty tough locations is an interesting thing. Maybe some of the locations made it quite standard in terms of where everybody's approach shot could get to. It was hard to get your approach shot close, or very hard to get it very close. So you ended up with a lot of samey-samey, player by player, group by group. But I think overall it was quite interesting to watch.
Test of patience. Some are better than that than others. Bryson clearly needed to get off very quickly on Friday to shoot another YouTube video. So we will watch Bryson with interest heading into Shinnecock at the US Open. Right, let's talk CJ Cup Byron Nelson, the PGA Tour event, and then we'll move on to Paul's, which is the Sudal Open on the DP World Tour. This has been played recently, before the PGA Championship, but because they slotted in Trump's Doral tournament, this got booted to the other side of the PGA Championship. So we've got this in Texas, in Dallas, and then we just moved to Fort Worth for the Colonial event next week, the Charles Schwab Challenge. So we have TPC Craig Ranch, which it's funny with these tournaments, isn't it, how they change and they literally kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? They evolve over time. This course has now been changed for this year. Lanny Wadkins, he actually made some changes to the course for last year, but now as soon as the last tee shot was hit and the last putt was dropped on 18, apparently the bulldozers moved straight in last year. He's now finished his renovation of TPC Craig Ranch, which always used to be a very easy test, like fifth easiest, fourth easiest, sixth easiest and seventh easiest. Easy for me to say, across 21 to 24. Last year, he made a few changes like thinning up the fairways. And I know it sounds ridiculous because Scottie Scheffler won at 31 under par. But he actually added seven courses worth of difficulty. It all of a sudden ranked as 14th easiest on the PGA Tour scoring charts out of 50 courses. He's now finished the renovation. It's a little bit strange. It's still a par 71. You don't see many restorations, renovations, redesigns where he's taken yardage away, but this has. It's now been shortened to 7,385 yards. From an agronomy perspective, I'm loving this because we've got new grasses this week compared to previous years. Last year, there was a lot of overseed on the course. That has been taken away, so we've now got Stadium Zuija grass on the fairways. We've got a bit of Zuija this week, boys. The overseed has disappeared. We've now got Tiff Tuff Bermuda grass rough. And the greens, you got, this is really, really good stuff. Brand new greens. They feature 777 bent grass greens. I can't say 777 for some reason. It just takes me to James Bond. But we've got treble seven bent grass greens, and they are new greens. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see a few greens that repel the odd approach shot this week. Where I'm heading with this is I'm not 100% certain this is going to be a minus 30 winning total. I think it could be a little bit tougher. I'm not suggesting it's going to be a US Open or a PGA Championship 8 under par job from last week, but we don't know. That's the point. It is a resort golf course, though. I mean, they make their money here by bringing in very, you know, rich Texas and Texan punters day in, day out to have a game of golf. So I can't see it being excruciatingly difficult. I don't know. I'm guessing, but I'd say kind of maybe low 20s wins this. Something along those lines. It'd be interesting to see how it plays compared to previous. That's all I will say. Just from a perspective, if you're looking for courses that feature Zuija, which is a funny fairway grass, Eastlake, Narashino, where they used to play the Zozo in Japan, the Yokohama Country Club, where they played the Bay Current last year. Xander won that one. That was also Zuija. Valhalla in 24, another course that Xander won at. That was Zuija. Probably the two that make most sense, especially with this depth of field, which is really poor. The Dunes Golf and Beach Club, where they played the Myrtle Beach Classic. That's Zuija. And TPC Southwind, where they played the FedEx Cup first event of the playoffs. Zuija of fairways as well. So if you just want to look at leaderboards, and you might see some names that pop up on those on a regular basis. They're the courses to look for from a Zuija perspective. The other thing I've got here, I mean, I'll take you through the strokes game, but yet again, with the course changing and knocking 180 yards off it and whatever, The format stays the same, though. Three par fives. They've reduced it down from 7,569 yards to 7,385. That's 184 yards shorter. Par remains as a par 71. But the restoration sees the closing par 5 18th become a 480-yard par 4. The single par 5 on the back 9 will be the 540-yard 12th hole. I think what you do find here and what you found in the past is that there, quite a few long irons are in play on some of these holes. So look for players that are decent from 175 and out with their irons. From a strokes gain perspective, in the past, it was very spiky, both off the tee here, 0.82, and also on approach, 1.66 in terms of the winners here over the past five. That's strokes gain per round. If you actually looked at strokes gain ball striking, that made up 64% of the total strokes gained. But every winner here, going back to the master of TPC Craig Ranch, K.H. Lee, who took out the first two Byron Nelsons held here, they all gain over a stroke per round with the putter. So team no putt or team negative strokes gain putt doesn't win you the tournament here. And that kind of makes sense at a birdie fest. You've got to play extremely well, like John Rahm did all those years ago at the American Express or the Bob Hope Lottery, as it was. He won with a negative strokes gained to win that many, many years ago. That was when he was walking off the green that time and he was caught on camera saying, this is like a...
Marin.
Yeah, he wasn't very happy, was he?
No.
So for me, players that are decent with their approach play at the moment, also players that can go on a hot run, and ideally, if you can find players a bit like Aaron Rye, who'd hit the top 25 with his putting previous to taking out the PGA, someone that's showing a bit of warmth with their putter isn't a bad shout this week. The field is relatively weak, as you would expect. It's got Scottie Scheffler at Tiger Woods type prices from Tiger's Pomp. I think he was priced up a 6-4 favourite on Monday, Paul, in some spots.
Yeah, there's a little bit longer now, but not a great deal. Certainly sub 2-1.
I'd be severely concerned with someone like Siwoo Kim to win this, who struggles to break even with the putter week in, week out. Especially on the basis that these are bent grass greens. And as we know with Siwoo Kim, every one of his PGA Tour victories has been on Bermuda grass. And that takes you to Jordan Spieth. And that then takes you to Brooks Koepka. And every interview you hear with Brooks Koepka is, and he's now moved to a spider. He's basically living his life trying to find the putter. He was asked about Liv last week in an interview. And he said, "I'm not worried about Liv. I'm worried about being able to putt properly again." That was his answer. He said, "My whole world is about trying to find a putter that actually works." So in a kind of tournament where you've got to shoot low scores, I'm not sure Brooks, you can ask questions against Siwoo Kim, Jordan Spieth, Brooks Koepka in my mind, and Scottie Scheffler. Well, even I mean, I'm an arch Scottie Scheffler backer, but I can't go anywhere near him. I've actually put up, bearing in mind one of mine withdrew, I did put up Aldridge Podgita. He's a WD. I see that Andrew Putnam's also withdrawn overnight. There's been quite a few WDs. And of course, Aaron Rye is a non-starter as well. I have got six for this, but I haven't got anyone shorter than 55-1. So we'll see how that goes this week. I have placed four of my six CJ Cup Byron Nelson bets with Bet365. If you're 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of their bet £10, get £30 of free bets, new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in this podcast description. Visit golfbettingsystem.co.uk/365. That's golfbettingsystem.co.uk/365 for £30. Of free bets with Bet365. Okay, first for me, Stefan Jaeger. I went a point each way. All of these are a point each way. 55 to 1 with Bet365, 8 places each way via their each way extra facility. He popped in here at the start of the PGA Championship. He was joint first round leader with about half the field. Shot 67. He then hits 18 straight pars on Friday to remain in the mix. I think he went out third last group on Saturday with Aldridge Podgieter. That was kind of a situation where you raise an eyebrow. Jaeger, 11th, 20th and 13th here after 36 holes 12 months ago. The 11th was in 23, the 20th was in 24. He won the 2024 Houston Open at Memorial Park. That ain't a bad correlating course for me. Jason Day's won this, Taylor Pendris won this, and Scotty Scheffler's won this. They've all got top finishes around Memorial Park, which is a long par 70, of course, in the Lone Star State. He was third for greens in regulation. That's good for Jaeger. 11th for ball striking and 9th for strokes gained putting at Aronimink. He can go extremely low. And if you want a Tom Weisskopf link, because this is a Weisskopf original before Lanny Watkins got his hands on it, he has finished second at the Black Desert Resort at that. I think they called it the Black Desert Championship the year he finished second, and last year they called it the Utah Bank Championship or something along those lines.
Yeah, Bank Utah.
So Jaeger for me. Now, I've no idea where you guys are chiming in. So where are you placing your first bet, Paul, price-wise?
I've got three, two at 66s, and then I've got one of the long prices, the same as you, actually.
Well, take us through your 66 to 1 chances, because I'm out at 70s with my next.
Yeah, I've backed two. Eric Cole I've backed, who has certainly been improving a bit of late. 14th at the Texas Open, 6th in the pairs event at the Zurich Classic, and then 6th at the Myrtle Beach on his last start. And of course, that Myrtle Beach form has worked out very nicely with Aaron Rye winning over the weekend. 23rd here on debut in 2023, 5th here last year. And to your point about putting, he was 6th for strokes gained putting last time. So coming in with a little bit of momentum with the flat stick. It will be interesting to see how the greens play, because, as you say, new greens. I've seen 007 bent grass before, so 777 will be...
I mean, the conditions you get in Texas are crazy. You know, freezing cold winters allied to red hot summers. So this apparently is a super, you know, strength type bent grass green that they can use in the deep south as a part if you don't want to use Bermuda grass.
Yeah, and they can keep it alive over over the summer.
Yeah, you got it.
Interesting. I expect it'll be quite bouncy anyway, given that it's just been laid. But yeah, we'll see. But even so, I think someone coming in with some form with a putter isn't a bad look. So at some point, Eric Cole will put it all together. And I thought 66 is given the options out there. Of course, everyone's just opposing Scotty in that respect. So I can see why you've gone down your route of multiple mid to longer prices. And I think if you're going to take on Scotty, then that's got to be the way to. Got to be the way to play it. The other one I've backed is Blades Brown, 66s as well, who, what can you say? He looks like a huge prospect. Third in Puerto Rico, 9th at Myrtle Beach also. So another one who got one of these top 10 finishes at Myrtle Beach on his last PGA Tour start. Keeps hopping backwards and forwards to the Corn Ferry Tour, but he'd put a stop to that as soon as he possibly can, I'm sure. And if he wins this week, then he'll certainly put a stop to it with immediate effect. One of those players that we all have been observing and can see that there's a player in there that could just explode into superstardom at any point. So interested to still get on board him while there's a price out there to attack. So yeah, Cole and Brown at 66 for me. I've got another one who's, as I say, shared with you at a longer three-digit price.
These are the finishing positions at the PGA Championship of the winner of the following tournament, if you follow my logic. This is since the PGA moved to May. Kokrag 49th, Sam Burns 20th. Griot missed the cut at the PGA. Davis Riley didn't play the PGA. And Ben Griffin last year won at Colonial after finishing 8th at Quail Hollow. So I thought I'd get those in there just for colour, really. My next selection is Austin Ekro. I always keep an eye on Ekro. He actually wins PGA Tour titles. In 24, he won two of them. 17 under at PGA National. And then at the end of the season, he went to Tiger Woods' El Cardinal and shot 24 under, which I like that total. He's kind of player that's a ball striker. He isn't long off the tee. He's kind of mid-pack, just bang on average. Not short, not long. He was second here in 23 behind Jason Day. He shot 65, 63, 65 across Friday, Saturday and Sunday. That was three shots better than Jason Day and was the lowest final 54-hole total in the field. So he clearly gets on with the course as it was. Form coming in, 10th at the Valero, 6th at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, where he played with Davis Thompson. He'll be popular this week, Davis Thompson. The problem I always find with Thompson, again, is he cannot putt. So expect him to be gaining 9 strokes on the greens this week. Ekro was 19th at the One Flight Myrtle Beach Classic last time out. He's 25th for birdie average for the season on the PGA Tour. Likes making a birdie. And in my 8-week strokes gain trackers, he's in the top 10 for both tee to green and current form. Barry, I can hear you cogitating and working through your strategy.
There you go. Justin, I've been really working hard at it. So, Paul, I'm with you on Blades Brown. This just, yeah, it kind of feels like a bit more accessible, a grab, because the field strength is down. So,
yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. I feel at the risk of it being turned into a fool by Scotty, I feel like this is a good week to oppose him, considering the putter wasn't his best friend last week. That might, you know, might still have a hangover for that going into this week. So I think it's a good week to go against him. Then I'm kind of flip flopping all over the place. I might have a look at Bezuidenhout again. I'm kind of looking at guys who played last week, guys who played the US Open qualifiers. Tom Kim finished second in that. Does he just carry that momentum? This course isn't that long.
Yeah.
Tom Kim's going back to how he used to play. He's starting, his approach play is now coming right back to the kind of what we were seeing when he was winning regularly. You just know at some point, one week, bang, putter to what goes and he wins a tournament. Don't forget President's Cup year as well, so he's way out of the standings at the moment. You know, he's got the likes of Jaden Schaefer above him and players of that ilk. So Tom Kim needs... He reminds me slightly of Matt Fitzpatrick last year qualifying for the... Because don't forget, Matt Fitzpatrick at the start of 25 was playing awful golf and went through a real slump. And then all of a sudden, switched coaches and found something quick. You could see with Tom Kim, he was definitely top 10 at Myrtle Beach. Now he's got through this US Open qualifier. He's coming.
He was sixth at Myrtle Beach, yeah. And look, results here, not terrible. 17th, 34th, 52nd, and a missed cut last year. But like the last 2 years, he's been pretty stinky at his golf. But so, yeah, now two good rounds there. Finished second at in Dallas for US Open qualifying. So I might grab him now while the price is good. See, Gray McDowell qualified as well. It's good for him.
He's going to be in the Ryder Cup team, he said in an interview a few weeks ago.
Hey, listen, if you don't aim for the stars, you can't land on the roof, so.
Very true.
By the way, you've hit on something here, Barry. Most of, well, the South Koreans that we know and love on the PGA Tour all use Dallas as a base, and you get the feeling, don't you, when you just look at previous players here and previous Asian players that have done really, bearing in mind that CJ Cup have now used this as their base for their sponsorship, that this course is used for practice. I mean, KH Lee won here in 21 and 22. Hideki Matsuyama was third in the latter year. 23 saw Siwoo Kim and CT Pan finish second and fourth. SH Kim and Benny Ann, they were top four in 24. And Tagumi Kanaya was T5 last year. I think a lot of the Japanese, a lot of the South Koreans, a lot of the Far Eastern guys use Dallas as a home, a base in the States. So I think a lot of these players use this as a practice facility or play semi-regularly. So I've gone for Marty Du. Point each way, 75 to 1 with Bet365, 8 places each way. He is based in Dallas. And his only top 5 finish on the PGA Tour was here. In 2023, when rounds of 63 and 64 powered him to a 54-hole lead. It's the only one he's ever had on the PGA Tour. Zicheng Du, or Marty Du, as I call him, he's just one of those golfers. He 13th at Scottsdale, 17th at PGA National, 21st at Memorial, and 13th last time out at the Dunes Golf and Beach Club at that one flight, Myrtle Beach. He's just always there or thereabouts. He's very good with his approaches. He's wild off the tee, so hopefully that doesn't hold him back too much this week. But I just thought someone with a bit of a local link, someone with a President's Cup vibe to him. So I've gone for Marty Du. Point each way, 75 to 1 with Bet365, 8 places each way. Where are you chiming in, Paul? Are you out at 100 to 1?
Yes, yeah. It's I think it's your longest price, I think.
Oh, okay. Any more for you, Barry?
No, I'm going to stick with those. I feel like I just get very loose and scattergunny.
Well, like I have.
Otherwise.
Yeah. Honestly, follow me down the wasting another week's worth of steak route.
I think we may have body swapped this week, Steve. It's,
oh, mate, I cannot remember the last time I put up 3 triple-digit selections. But I have. Carl Phillips, 100 to 1 with Betfred, 8 places each way. These are all Monday lunchtime prices. He's Australian. He's trending. Top 35 for birdie average across the 26th season. He's great with his longer approaches. Across my strokes gained rankings 8 weeks. In this field, he ranks top 20 for putting, current form, and top 5 for approach. Love that. So a guy that can stick his approaches close and is putting well. 33rd at the signature at level RBC Heritage. Did well to get in that field. 13th at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. And he was 24th last time out at the One Flight Myrtle Beach Classic. Under the radar, bit of Carl Phillips. He won the 2025 Puerto Rico Open in his rookie season. So I'm on Phillips. I was on this chap last time at Myrtle Beach. He didn't play badly. I think he was top 20. He was 6th after 36 holes. I was getting quite excited. And then he just had a bad Saturday. Taylor Moore, 100 to 1 with Bet365 each way extra, 8 places each way. Look at Taylor Moore. He reminds me a little bit of our old friend Davis Riley. Because Taylor Moore, he doesn't do a great deal outside of southern United States. he's not the kind of guy that you're going to find him winning at Torrey Pines or Pebble Beach or Poana or, you know, maybe. He tends to specialise on golf courses in the south and the southeast of the United States. He's won at Valspar at the Copperhead course, fifth at the FedEx St. Jude. I like the Zoysia grass link there. That was a playoff event in 23 at Southwind. Second at the Houston Open at Memorial Park. You can see where I'm heading here with these correlating courses that I've mentioned. He was also second this year at the Cognizant Classic at PGA National. So you can just see, like Southern agronomy, like Southern golf courses, 20th when he had the misfortune of partnering Wyndham Clark at the Zurich Classic the other week, 17th at the One Flight Myrtle Beach Classic, as I said. He was 6th after 36 holes. Again, in this field, top 25 for putting and current form, plus was 15th for tee to green last time out at the Myrtle Beach Classic, which, as we know, does feature the Zoysia-type fairway. So I'm on Taylor Moore, a bomber that can putt. And then I'm on the final selection, which Paul is also on. So this is my reasoning. In 2026, I'm trying to do different things to try and uncover more winners. And I would normally look at this guy and literally put a cross straight through him and say, he never wins, doesn't win, not interested. But I just thought the price available on Mark Hubbard was really high. 110-1 I got with Bet365, 8 places each way. Now, Mark Hubbard, last time we saw him, was beaten by a single shot by Brant Snedeker at the Myrtle Beach Classic. And then you just tie that in with the fact that Hubbard was fifth here last year, shooting 65s across both Friday and Sunday. And I just thought, triple digit, guy that finished second last time out and was fifth here last year. That, you know, that situation where current form and course form merge, I'll have that. So I took 110-1 on Mark Hubbard. Could Mark Hubbard win his first ever PGA Tour title this week at the CJ Cup Byron Nelson? I don't know. It's unlikely, but I'm on board at 110-1. The other thing with Hubbard is, you do see with him, he has periods of nothing. And then when he finds something, you can go through various years, he can link two top each way payouts together in consecutive tournaments. And I like that. I like that a lot. What can you add to that, Paul, which I haven't... I'm sure you've got an angle that I didn't get anywhere close to thinking about.
Well, I think as you've described, it's that classic combination of course form and current form. And you look along the line, you think, whoa, this guy's been offered at healthy three-figure prices, even with extended terms. What's not to like? And as you said, yes, the bit I picked up on is that he can and does string a couple of decent kind of top 10, top 8 finishes together. So his Myrtle Beach and his top 5 here last year. So I think he finished 7th and 5th, something like that last year in consecutive weeks. And of course, as you described earlier, the scheduling was different. So they were in a slightly different spot pre-PGA last year. This time round, of course, he's got the PGA in between times. But even so, the fact that he could go out there and continue to perform as he did at Myrtle Beach, where he finished 2nd, as you said, I see no reason to suggest he can't. 3rd for approach, 5th for tee to green, 8th for strokes gained putting, and again, that kind of spiky putting performance, which I wanted to see as well about a player coming into this week. So, at the price on offer, I could find no reason to suggest that you shouldn't back him just for a bit of each way interest, really.
So Hubbard, Moore, Taylor variety, Carl Phillips, Marty Du, Zichengdu, Austin Eckroat, and Stefan Jaeger. They're my 6 for the CJ Cup Byron Nelson. Can't believe I'm saying that, but they are my 6.
So ridiculous. Like right. Drunk playing a darts tournament. Go on. Let's move over to Belgium.
I'm surprised I didn't throw in Adrien Damar de Chassin into the mix. Bearing in mind, I haven't, and I have mentioned him on the pod, so he's likely to win now. But, yeah, those are my six. Right, let's move on, Paul. We're into the heart of the DP World Tour season now. We're moving to Belgium this week. The Soudal Open. Take it away.
We are, yeah. Back to the... Back to the mainland after the break for the PGA Championship. Fifth renewal of the Soudal Open. So we've got a bit of course form and a bit of history to go on. We also used to have the Belgian knockout, which was the precursor to this event. So in a rare feat for the DP World Tour, we've actually got something to work with this week. Thomas Detry is the 12-1 favourite. Daniel Hillier, 16-1. Jaden Schaefer, 22s. Jose Luis Ballester, 22-1, Oliver Lindell. And then you're out to the likes of Henny Duplessis, Ewan Ferguson, 28s, 30-1 bar. So a pretty typical DP World Tour field and some familiar names at the top, just with the exception of Angel Ayora, who isn't playing this week, who tends to adorn one of those top positions in the betting. Ladbrokes and Cole, 7 places each way this week as standard, so some extra places there. Betfred have got 8 and 10 place options, and of course Bet365 have 8, 10 and 12 place each way options available this week. So do have a little shop about before you place your bets, because there are some good combinations of prices and places out there for you to find. Now, we're playing at Rincven International in Antwerp in Belgium, as Steve said. It's a 6,940-yard par 71. Get it right. Didn't write it down. Parkland course. Composite of the north and south courses here. It's a mix of tree-lined and more exposed holes. Only 2 par 5s. Each of them, so there's one on each of the 9s. 3 par 3s, which explains the par 71, which I eventually got to. 13 par 4, so another one of these par 4 heavy setups on the DP World Tour. 6 of those par 4s, though, are sub 400 yards, as you'd expect, with a sub 7,000 yard course. There are going to be some relatively short, attackable holes out there. So 6 sub 400 yard par 4s for the players to get their teeth into. It's generally a flat, quite scoreable track in good conditions, without it being a total and utter pushover. It hasn't proven to be so far. I guess that's because there aren't these par 5s on the course, or there aren't 4 par 5s on the course for the players to make birdies and eagles at. The greens are Poana based, but they overseed them each year with bent grass. It gives them a target of 80% bent and 20% power. So for all intents and purposes, they should play pretty much like a smooth bent grass green. We shall see. Weather's set fair, warm, sunny, light winds, temperatures up to kind of the high 20s, 27, 28. So that's the low 80s Fahrenheit over the weekend. So it should be nice and pleasant, light winds. So I can't imagine it will be a tough renewal. It should be relatively good scoring this week. Previous winners here, Belgian knockout. We had Guido Migliozzi and Adrian Ategui win in 2018, 2019. Then the Soudal Open, as we know it now, started in 2022. So the 4 renewals have gone to Sam Horsfield at 13 under. He was a 22-1 shot. And then for punters who like big prices, the last 3, Simon Forsström, 17 under, 200-1. Nacho Elvira, 18 under, 100-1. And then last year, Christopher Reitan, before he moved on to Pastures New, 13 under, 125-1 he was last year. You ain't going to get that about him nowadays. I know that for a fact. So, yeah, some chunky priced winners there. We do have some data, do have some analysis of the players' performances. It's all in my preview, so if you want to really drill into some of those stats and how the players have performed at both the Belgian knockout and the Soudal Opens here, then take a look at that. Generally, though, accuracy hasn't been particularly critical. None of those Soudal winners finished any better than 40th for driving accuracy on the week from the players who made the weekends. It's tended to come down to players who can hit greens, which isn't particularly easy, and then those who can scramble and putt well. So that tends to be the order of the day. Another one of these second shot courses, as you describe, I suspect, for players who can... everyone's missing fairways, and it doesn't seem to be massive penalty in that respect. In terms of par four scoring, that may well be the more critical point. Horsfield was 8 under for the par fours. Forsterum was 14 under. Elvira 12 and Reitan 10 under for the par fours last year. None of them were better than 3 under for the par fives over the course of the week. So that really isn't where the battle is this week. The battle is undoubtedly on who can make the most of the par fours over the course of 4 days. Got some basic strokes gained data as well from the four Soudal Opens. Bit of a mix. Forsterum and Reitan both were excelling in terms of tee to green. Second for tee to green, both of them. First and sixth for around the green. Horsfield and Elvira, both of them top 12 for approach. And then fifth and third for putting. So a couple of different combinations there. I guess you just need to kind of excel in one or the other. I think given that the conditions, it may shift it slightly towards putting this week would kind of be my feeling. I suspect the winning total may well be up towards the upper end of those numbers that we've seen before. So maybe 17, 18, something in that bracket under par. But we shall see. The only other point I think I'll make is that all of the four Soudal Open winners had a top 8 finish in one of their last four starts. So some recent-ish current form coming into this is good. Reitan had finished runner-up at the Hainan Classic 4 weeks before. And sometimes you go back and look at these events when you preview them a year later and you see the winner and you see how you could have got to them, and you feel a little frustrated that you didn't manage to pick out someone like a Christopher Reitan, who had shown some decent form in the recent past and had some ability, as we've seen very clearly over the last few weeks on the PGA Tour. Anyway, the other point to make, there was US Open qualifying over in Dallas last week, there was US Open qualifying also at Walton Heath here in England yesterday. And more than a third of the field that are playing in the Soudal Open did play over at Walton Heath. So that's many of those guys playing 36 holes and then flying straight across to Belgium to start their campaign on Thursday. So that will take something out of some of the players. As to how you view it as a punter, that's open to debate. It could be taken as a positive if your player's done really well and coming in with momentum, or playing 36 holes, then rushing across to Belgium and having your preparation time compromised could be seen as a negative. It's each for their own, I guess, as to how you view that. Just for reference, Nathan Kimsey was the medalist yesterday at Walton Heath. We had Rocco Repetto, Filippo Celli, Angel Hidalgo, Matthew Jordan, Nicholas Norgaard and Hugo Coussard were the qualifiers through that process yesterday. Just missing out, Henny Duplessis, Thomas Detry, two of the favourites, as well as Andrew Wilson. They were just missed out on the eventual final spot. So how that affects the likes of a Detry and Duplessis, we shall see. Anyway, I've backed four this week. Again, similar to Steve, they're all kind of mid-prices. I've swerved the top of the market. Some of those guys were involved yesterday, and it's kind of put me off a little bit. I've gone for four players who should be a little bit more rested who weren't involved yesterday. Callum Hill I've backed at 45-1 with Betfred. That's with 8 places. You can get 50 as a standard if you prefer. Twice a winner on the DP World Tour. 2021 Kazoo Classic. 2025 Joburg Open also. 19 under and 14 under with the winning totals. I think that's right where I want to see the kind of winning score from the players this week. So that's right in his wheelhouse by the looks of it. Solid 2026, a couple of top twos. Well, in fact, he lost the playoff at Bahrain, second the week after in Qatar, sixth last time out in India. So has some positive form this season. 18th here on debut back in 2024. He was positive in each strokes gained category that week. And crucially for him, for Callum, he's putting well above his career average right now. He currently sits third for strokes gained putting for this season. And that's been the standout stat from his numbers that he's been producing this week. And I like that this week. I think that could serve him well, Callum Hill. So 45-1. I've also backed the runaway winner from last time out in Catalunya. Now, URF Premlal, that's 55-1. I backed him yesterday. There's actually, it's been lengthened in places overnight. I saw a little bit of 70-1 this morning. Now, this is nothing like the prices we saw in Spain, when he lapped the field in Spain, of course. And I guess some punters might balk at the fact that he's the knife's been taken so dramatically to him. But for a guy that's just won by 14 strokes and threatened to break every record in the book, I just wonder if he's got the bug and goes back to back. We've certainly seen South Africans do this in the past. And I found a few examples. Brandon Grace back in 2012 broke his maiden and then won the week after. Jaden Schaefer, as we know, in December won twice in quick succession. And then Casey Jarvis did the same in February through March. So we've got some recent examples of these players who find a way to break through at DP World Tour level and then immediately go straight back in. And, you know, this is a lad who won by 14 shots just a fortnight ago. Can he do it again? Was it a flash in the pan? I don't know. But at 50s and above in terms of his price, I'm happy to pay to find out in this kind of level of field. So count me in. Jurav Premlal. Also back Daniel Rodriguez, 60-1 with eight places. Again, you can get 70s with fewer places. Impressive rookie season from the Portuguese player. 31st right now on the race to Dubai. Gained nearly €400,000 in prize money from his season to date, which is really strong for a guy in his rookie season. Getting closer to a breakthrough too. Sixth at the Hainan Classic, second in Turkey. Co-led with Mikhail Lindeberg into the final day in Turkey. No disgrace, shot 71 in the end, but just not quite enough to keep up with the pace. But he should come on for that. It's got, you know, it's all experience. It's all helping push in the right direction. And as a 296 average driver of the golf ball, it's not long by modern standards. So this kind of relatively short setup should be suitable for him. And the final one, again, I think someone who should be suited by this course is Andy Sullivan, who I backed at 90s yesterday. Still 80-1 out there. Has been quite popular. So if you fancy a bit of Andy, you might need to be relatively quick with the pricing dropping. And for me, Andy's from Nuneaton. Perhaps he can get some inspiration from his fellow Midlander, Aaron Rye, and his win last week. Rye from Wolverhampton. So, you know, these guys have rubbed shoulders all the way through their careers so far. And yeah, not a dissimilar profile, apart from the fact that, of course, Rye has gone on to win on the PGA Tour and now a major championship too. Prior to that, they weren't dissimilar in terms of their careers to date. Another relatively short hitter, and you know, these scoreable Parkland tracks are exactly where Andy Sullivan tends to excel. 9th and 11th here from four attempts over the years. 2nd at the Dubai Desert Classic earlier in the season. 9th at the Hainan Classic. 3rd at the Indian Open. Off the ball a little bit since then, but I think he could bounce back on what is a pretty suitable course, I think. So that's Sullivan, Rodriguez, Premlal and Callum Hill, my four. What about you, Barry? You got any fancies in this one?
I have a couple of, yeah. I'm going to stick with Hugo Cousseau. Finished 7th in qualifying in Walton Heath yesterday. So he had a, you know, just a little trip across the water. I'm also going for Niklas Norgaard. So he finished T3 there, and he was also, where is he? He had a good performance here. Was it last year? A couple of years ago? 2 years ago, he finished second here. So, in, you know, general tournament form, not amazing. 43rd, 51st his last two. But, yeah, I'm going to hopefully just compounds on the good performance of qualifying and puts it together. And then another one I was looking backed is Øyhan Gyllemundigi.
Hmm.
So these are all, well, Kuso's 45 to 1, and then the other two boys are 80 and 90 to 1. So yeah, Gyllemundigi, 16th, missed cut third his last three outings. I think the course is, you know, not too long, so it should work fine for him. And as such, I have launched the bet.
Very nice. Yeah, he's improving, isn't he? So we'll see how he goes. Steve, what about you?
Kazuma Kobori? First show, I managed to get 55 to 1 with Bet365, 8 places each way by that each way extra facility. Third at the BMW International Open. He was second at the Betfred British Masters at the Belfry. That was last year. And he's warming to the task. 13th at the Turkish Airlines. He was second after 36 holes, third after 54. And then sixth last time out in Catalunya, where he was 12th. He was 12th and 4th for tee to green across both of those performances. Short hitter, all about fairways and strokes gained approach with Kobori. He was 10th for approach last time out in Barcelona. So Kobori for me.
Hmm. Yeah, that's the Belfry link isn't a bad shout, because that's another one of these par 4 heavy courses. Slightly more forgiving this than Belfry, but even so, I think if you're looking for correlations, that's not a bad one to look at, I think. But yes.
I think one day, lads, one day in the future when we're retired and got nothing else better to do, I think we need to go to Walton Heath qualifying on a Monday for the US Open and just walk around with these top pros. I think that'd be fantastic. Yeah,
that sounds lovely. No crowd fighting. Just go and watch and rounds get put together.
Yeah. That'd be really good. It'd be good.
Nicely chilled, shouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be cool, wouldn't it? Mm. Okay. I hope your bets go well, gents.
Yeah, best of luck, boys.
You too, boys.
Best of luck to listeners. We'll be back next week. I think we've got the Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial in Texas for the on the PGA. And what have you got, Paul?
It's the Austrian Alpine Open next week on yet another new course. So some research to do.
I always like that episode, mate. Lots of yodeling.
Beautiful surroundings, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more, cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system, it's the golf